The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alex Kratosky, and this week we are laden with events, from the on-the-ground coverage of the latest from Mobile World Congress, happening as we record in Barcelona, where technology editor Charles Arthur is running around gathering all the mobile news fit to print, to a report from last weekend's Guardian South by Southwest Hack Weekend, which saw developers and journalists come together in King's Place in London to piece together the best digital tools for covering news stories. Joining me in the studio is Vic Keegan, friend of Tech Weekly and former editor of the technology section of the paper. Welcome, Vic. Now,
Hi.
you've been both a journalist and you've now evolved into a bit of an app developer yourself. How would you marry the two disciplines?
Well, I think the linking point is the mobile phone, because that's becoming a way of commoditizing news and crowdsourcing news. So the news is often coming from mobile phones, and it's increasingly being read on mobile phones or tablets, and we just have to adjust to that. From the point of view of a sort of incipient app developer, things can be location-based. It's also very interesting. Newspapers haven't explored that all that much. If you think of practically anything in the world, it has an extra dimension if it's location-based.
But you've also, with your apps, I'd love to sort of talk a little bit about them. You've kind of embedded the locations with a bit of magic, with a bit of literary history, which adds, when it comes to a news story, for example, a three-dimensionality associated with, you know, here is the actual history of what's happening in Egypt, and you know, here are the various contexts, the various cultural dimensions. Can you tell me a little bit about
that's
what
right. We've done
doing?
Sort of the two main ones were city poems, which are about poems in London. It tells you on your phone you're 35 meters away from a poem about that statue in Trafalgar Square which you didn't think about, but which had an interesting history. One of the guys there was a commander in India, used to send his reports back by poems. And it also, they're all classic out of copyright poems, and I learned more about London than I have in any other way. And I realised that they were really the sort of social networks of their day. There weren't any newspapers, and poems were reflecting the kind of mood of the city. And then I moved on to doing a similar thing for Shakespeare's London, because I'm interested in Shakespeare, and there's hardly anything to commemorate Shakespeare by Londoners. There's the reconstructed globe built by an American, but I was amazed at the things that, they're all known to Shakespeare buffs, but for instance, you walk out of the Tate Gallery, 100 yards ahead of you, was the Swan Theatre. That held 3,000 people at a time when London only had 200,000 people. And there are lots and lots of others. The only place we know where he lived for certain is buried under a car park. Not a single plaque to. So this is a way of using new technology to unearth bits of literary history. I think that's really interesting, and it can be has lots of applications now.
Yes, and indeed, as we said before, it can add real context to news stories as well. Well, we'll also be looking at the latest developments in the Nokia-Microsoft merger, which has caused waves internally and externally for the mobile company. Keep listening for this and more over the next 30 minutes of Tech Weekly from The Guardian. Last week, Charles Arthur led us through the latest story on the relationship between Nokia and Microsoft. After their quarterly report, Stephen Elop, the company's CEO, had alluded to a stronger connection between the two companies, likely to result in the mobile manufacturer's use of the Windows 7 mobile operating system on its next-generation hardware. But since then, a Nokia-Microsoft merger has been announced. A memo from Stephen Elop describing the company as a burning platform was leaked, and the staff in their Finland office walked out on Friday. All change at Nokia. So, Vic, the company announced that they're going to be scrapping their legacy operating system, Symbian, and that the open-source next-generation operating system that they've been developing, MeeGo, would likely only be included on one device in 2011. All of the stratosphere, all of the various pieces of news that are coming out of Nokia signal that it's really in turmoil. Is it the burning platform that Stephen Elop has described in his leaked memo?
Well, it is now. I've admired Nokia for many years. It's a huge success, European success story. Symbian was a great London success story. Symbian, a Finnish company, got 40% of the global market for phones. It's definitely been in trouble recently, but not in this much trouble. And they're going to Microsoft, which hasn't produced a successful phone yet. And in his previous incantation at Microsoft, he did the only link with Nokia with a business phone, and that wasn't a success. And now suddenly he's betting the whole company on this this, putting an operating system which developers don't like much into a phone that isn't there. It's coming out next year. What are they going to do in between, even if it is a success in a year's time? And I doubt that, because there's nothing in it that I've seen so far in the Windows 7 phone that is. I mean, it's much better than the previous one, but I just can't see it. And Nokia, a good company, it sells phones in developing countries at reasonable prices all around the world. Apple gets all the publicity because it sells phones that are highly profitable to rich people. Nokia serves the rest of the world, and suddenly they've just bet their future on something which I just cannot see coming off.
Why have they done this? I mean, what has actually happened? Have they been disrupted, terrified by the Apple tablet smartphone revolution?
Oh, they are. They've been knocked cyber. They don't know where to go. It's worth reminding oneself that a few years ago I was talking to a Nokia executive, and he said that they had 4 million developers on their books. I repeat that, 4 million developers. But I couldn't think of a single app. Nokia is innovative. It does everything quicker and earlier, but it never got its act together in terms of getting a phone that was really beautifully designed that everybody wanted. And so I can understand why it was in turmoil with all the app stores coming out on Android and on Apple. But to throw itself into Microsoft, rather than getting all they needed was a strong Steve Jobs type person just to take their fragmented systems and their departmental problems together and say, no, we're doing this phone and that phone and let's throw everything into it. They don't need to go to Microsoft.
Isn't that what Stephen Elop is trying to do? I mean, he talks about in this memo that I've referred to a couple of times, he talks about this mobile ecosystem, the platform, the app store, the hardware. Isn't he trying to consolidate and say, okay, right, this is how we're going to move forward?
He is, but he comes from Microsoft. I believe he's, the seventh or eighth biggest shareholder in Microsoft. So he's got a conflict of interest about when he makes decisions. Because at the moment, Microsoft's got everything to gain. It's got phones it doesn't have at the moment. And if everything fails, it can buy Nokia at a cheap price. It may be able to buy it very soon at a cheap price, the way it's going down. Yeah, he certainly seems to be a strong person, but he hasn't got the sort of track record that I have confidence in.
What are the actual terms of the relationship with Nokia and Microsoft?
Nokia is going to pay royalties to use the Windows 7 operating system on its phones, and Microsoft will have a big input into what sort of phone it is. Now, Microsoft do have Kinect and all these new things. They have done well at Microsoft, and that maybe they got something up their sleeve.
Now, Kinect is the gaming.
The gaming user interface, which is terrific. You can wave your hands in front of the television set, and you can do everything from playing games to painting on it. If that moves on to phones in the future, I can see there could be some spectacular opportunities, but I'm still thinking of next year to 18 months. Who's going to buy a Nokia phone when they know that they're removing all their operating systems? Are developers going to write yet again? They've already got too many operating systems developers. Are they going to work for Microsoft Nokia rather than Android, which is exploding, or Apple, which is already there? I hope I'm wrong, because I think I love Nokia as a company, but I just can't see it.
Well, it was interesting. You say that, you know, the developers are trying to kind of, seems that they themselves are in a little bit of turmoil about these announcements. And, you know, they in the Finnish office, they walked out on Friday sort of en masse, and people are suggesting that this is a protest move because of the announcements to do with MeeGo and to do with Symbian. Is there a mutiny afoot? Do you see developers fleeing from the burning platform and going to Apple, going to other to Android, to other operating systems that they can develop for?
Is this the Egypt moment? I don't know. I was a few months ago, I was at an event hosted by Microsoft, at which developers were there, and Microsoft said to the developers, look, we're here to make you money. Just please tell us how we can make you money, and that's what we're here for. There was a long silence, and then someone spoke up and said, you can help us. Please don't give us another operating system to have to work on. Because they've already have too many. I know this as a developer. We've just done it on the iPhone. Now we're porting it to Android, coming out very soon. But it's quite a big thing to do that. And to go on to Nokia as well was daunting already. And now to go to put resources aside for a phone that doesn't exist yet and may or may not be a success, it's going to take a lot of courage to do that when you've got Android exploding all over the world.
This has been an issue in development in other areas. So, for example, in gaming, we've seen, you know, a huge proliferation of different systems where, you know, whether it's the Nintendo, Microsoft, or the Sony versions, and how developers kind of expand and contract around these different things. And with mobile phones, people have been talking about the problems with developing for different systems for years and years and years. So do you see this as a moment of consolidation, or is this simply part of a system, of a routine that happens business-wise every 5 years or whatever?
It ought not to matter. After all, the market is soon going to be 4 or 5 billion mobile phones. It ought to be able to support a number of ecosystems, especially as the ecosystems themselves are kind of converging. You know, they're all going to have Twitter on and Facebook and all this. But developers, especially small developers, don't have the money to invest in multiple versions of it. And Android alone, although they like it in many ways, it's still got lots of different phones and different size screens and all the rest, and that takes a lot of effort up. Now, if Microsoft buy up some hugely good game or whatever, that's a different thing, because these are driven by good apps. I can't see anybody sort of betting all their money, putting it all to do a special thing for Microsoft at the moment. I mean, I hope it will change, but at the moment, I don't think it's a good outlook.
Well, this isn't the only news to come out of Mobile World Congress and the run-up to Mobile World Congress. You've been keeping your eye on the coverage of MWC in Barcelona. Are there any new things that you've seen that have piqued your interest?
Well, one really did, which is the 3D mobile phone. The mobile phone with a 3D screen. And normally I'd have passed over it thinking, oh, I'm not going to wear glasses. But I've actually tested one of these as a prototype, and you don't wear glasses, and it has a real three-dimensional effect. I mean, my eyes nearly popped out of my head. Only one person can watch it because it has a single focus point. So you can use it on a phone or on an iPad or an Android app. So you can watch films in 3D, and they don't have to be made in 3D. It actually converts them on the run from 2D into 3D. Now, I think that's a quite spectacular breakthrough. That's the thing that most caught my eye, that now, having seen it in prototype, that someone is now, LG, is actually putting it out on the market in a month or two's time.
You can also see that for things like augmented reality apps. You can see how that type of technology could be used in different systems. So it's not just a gimmick, is it?
No, absolutely. And the adult industry, don't talk about it.
No, we won't. We've done enough talking about the adult industry in this podcast recently. But are there any other things that you've seen?
There was this new tablet that you can write on with a stylus, and you can write in ordinary writing, and it converts it into a digital form. Now, that sort of thing's been around for some time, but I hadn't thought of a tablet coming up like that. And I've got to think about that. Is that something that there's a market for? You don't have to type things in wherever you are. You can draw and then write underneath, and it all comes in. I don't know. There's so many things out there that the market's got to sort itself out to find what it likes. And there'll be some things that are just that much different to be real big sellers.
How is that particularly innovative? Because we have seen that. So, for example, I remember the Palm Pilot had its own, you know, scribble language that would convert your handwriting. And, you know, other, I believe, was it HP or was it Toshiba's? Their tablets.
Indeed,
have always...
The Apple Newton had it as well. But they've never worked. It's always one of those gee whiz things. It works once and you think, yeah, it's terrific. But if you use it for a long time, it doesn't. Like speech recognition, you know, when that works, as it sometimes does, it's amazing. But a lot of the time it doesn't work. And I don't know how far they've got with the technology. If they've really got it good, and you can recognize your writing, it can learn, and you can do that, then maybe there is a... Because a lot of people who are a bit scared of typing, you know, a big market out there, perhaps. I don't know. I haven't actually tested it.
Well, we shall see. And you can catch up with everything else that's happening at Mobile World Congress at guardian.co.uk/technology. Last weekend, The Guardian and Rewired State hosted a hack event in King's Place for journalists and for web developers to generate new digital tools for news reporters to cover events like the South by Southwest Interactive Music and Film Festivals coming up in March. The weekend started at 10 a.m. on Saturday with journalist representatives from Le Monde, La Repubblica, The Times, and, of course, The Guardian, knocking around ideas with indie web developers and developers from Spotify, SoundCloud, and Media Molecule, as well as developers from, of course, The Guardian. It concluded at 6 p.m. on Sunday, after very few hours of sleep and a whole lot of pizza and coffee. Joining me to talk through the event are Adam McGregor from Rewired State and Robbie Clutton, one of the coders at the event, and, of course, a Guardian and hack yourself. So Adam, how many people were actually at the hack?
Overall, we think we had about 80, 82 or so. We tweeted because that was the count at one point, and it's quite a nice figure.
It is, yeah. Well, and in addition, at the sort of award ceremony at the end, because that was the culmination, that was a packed room, I have to say.
The room was fully full.
It was,
so quite a good turnout.
Very, very impressive, definitely. Well, Jemima and I spent the weekend at King's Place with our microphones, speaking with the developers and, of course, the journalists. We started by speaking with Robbie and with Ben Nichols from The Dot Consulting, who I caught up with to find out what their plans were for the weekend.
So what I'm interested in doing is, you know, if I'm at a festival, I want to know what bands to go and see, but what bands I don't know about, you know. So what I want to do is kind of look at my Last FM profile data, see, you know, get that to find the bands which I'm interested in, and then look at the kind of data set which is available for a festival and kind of try and have that recommend me bands which I might like over the course of a festival which I wouldn't have heard of. And then these guys are kind of going to use that data to build kind of a nice site to say, you know, you should be at this gig at this time and you should be at this gig at this time. And so just try and help it plan, like recommend a day for you.
What about serendipity? What about just accidentally sitting in a field and letting the music wash over you? Is there a place for that in this modern internet connected age or in your app?
I'm sure you could kind of pull in other kind of data as well. And I think Music Metro have got some really cool things about, you know, trending information. So if bands kind of really spiking on kind of social media to say, oh, and that wasn't on my schedule, maybe you should go and see these guys because they're really kind of trending at the minute.
How much did you feedback on this idea? Or did you just say, yes, 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 sir, I'll go away and I'll code it?
I'm just here to take as much information from Robbie as possible and then build on top of it.
Really?
Yeah. We're generally all quite lazy, so if someone's building something that we could use, I'm happy to sit back and build something on top of it, and if necessary, build something in return. So it's like share and share alike, but be lazy.
So what is the next step? So you look like you're getting up and going away. You've dropped the idea bomb, and now you're like, see you later. I'm off to go have some eggs and sausages in bed.
Yeah, I'm going to have some pancakes. So I think we had similar ideas, but perhaps diverging. I think now we've kind of realised that there's quite a big overlap. We've kind of been able to separate the concerns, and I'm going to kind of go away and build like data APIs for Matt to build on. So I think we'll kind of know where our kind of separations are. So then we'll kind of come together throughout the day and make sure we're kind of speaking the same language.
I'm Prem Saga, and I run a company called Dharmafly in Brighton. I make web apps, social web apps. I came pretty blank-minded. I've just been sort of milling around, seeing what people are doing. I might be working with the Spotify guys on some harebrained scheme to track eye movement and play music according to what you're reading.
So at the moment we're talking about two things. One of them is a mobile interface for scheduling, because we're assuming that the person who is at the event is going to want their schedule on their mobile device because they're not going to be carrying around their laptop. But then another element of what we're working on is about pulling in information and pushing out information about bands that you've maybe seen, which we have some, not pre-work, but a project that was done a couple of years ago that we could use. But that's not mobile-oriented. So what we're trying to do is work out a way of providing an interface from one to the other that's as clean as possible. I can do the mobile thing in like a couple of hours.
Okay, so I'm on the mobile, and I want to do some write-ups.
Yeah.
So I think I need the whole thing on the mobile, albeit reduced functionality, but I need...
I think that's entirely possible. I mean... Yeah. You're not going to write a massive review through a mobile phone, but you could make some notes. Or if you're watching the band, you may want to make a note of the set list, something like that. Would be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then if you wanted to write a full review, you could go to the same URL through your laptop.
I'm happy going and building this just really quickly with lunch. And it'll probably look a bit crap initially, but if we get time.
My name is Yves Houdès. I'm French. I work for Le Monde, a big daily newspaper in Paris, and I'm a reporter, a roving reporter. I've come here with two coders, developers. One is a web designer, the other is a hardcore programmer, and they'll be doing the heavy lifting. I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm here to learn. And what we're trying to do is trying to reinvent a way to tell a story by combining text and video in an innovative fashion.
So how was last night, as it were?
We've got some pieces, and we need to assemble them now.
Okay. So were you guys here all night?
I lived here about 10, 10:30. Did some stuff at home, so worked from home till about 2-3 in the morning, and then came back in here. Just did some styling, CSS stuff, which is easier to do at home than do here.
You've got how many more hours before the presentation? You've got about five hours?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What do you think of your prospects? Do you think you're going to have pulled it all together, or is it going to be a bit of a patch job?
Not as much as we wanted to have done. I think the issues yesterday with the network kind of set us back by pretty much a day, which is a bit of a shame. So,
if we present anything at 3, we'll be very lucky.
That was Ben Nichols from The Dot Consulting at last weekend's Guardian South by Southwest Hack. And also, thanks very much to everyone else who came along for the ride. Adam, ultimately, what we were looking for was to see what would happen when a happy marriage between journalists and developers came together.
Journalists, not just from the UK as well. That's the other thing to remember, is that we had an international audience to cater for as well, which was quite an interesting, quite an unusual, in some regards, approach to doing things. So I suppose we were sort of working out ideas to use to combine tech skills and journalism and all of the video and all of the audio stuff that's associated with South By, so we could merge it all together and see what happened.
And how many apps came out in the end?
In the end, I think there were around about 25 to 30, it looks like, on a quick glance.
And they ranged, Robbie, from everything from, you know, I think my favourite, most bizarre app came from the guys from Spotify, who did I can just see this turning into just auditory chaos. It was an eye tracking technology that meant that you tagged a word or an article or a phrase or a paragraph with a particular music composition as the journalist, so that as people were reading the article, they would then have like a soundtrack that was determined by the that would turn into madness.
Yeah, I'm sure that could get quite busy audibly quite quickly. Yeah. Although I could see that kind of really working with one of the other guys had the obituary application, you know, and perhaps if you had that combination of that and, you know, a lifestyle through, you know, through an artist, and this is the kind of music they had at the start and towards the end. And I think it's got some potential, but it was quite wacky as well.
Now, it wasn't just about the music element either. There were, in fact, the winning entry, Adam, was something called Articler, of course, the way of the web developers. We lose out on the last E of any name. But Articler was more of a generic journalist tool. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So Articler, I think, wowed the judges, it's fair to say. So the idea was that you take an idea, and as you're in the field as a journalist or a reporter, you take photos, you upload them straight away by sending them away. You can add in audio clips, you can add in video stuff, and then you've got a nice presentation field, thingamajig, wizzy, draggy thingamajig. So you pull your video in, you add your text, and that's your article written.
It looked, I have to say, I was definitely wowed, because it was almost a seamless user interface for writing the text and pulling in lots of different elements, including things like your Twitter feeds or, you know, other similar people who were covering an event. And
so if it exists on the web, it could in theory be pulled in really simply and just dragged in from a sidebar into the article itself. So
now, Vic, when you were a full-time working hack, what types of technology, now, of course, that you've been dabbling with development yourself, what types of technology would have made your journalism production easier?
This one sounds like it would. If you're there and you're getting in Egypt, and you're getting tweets locally and you're getting photographs coming in, you ask yourself, do you have to be in Egypt at all? Or can you be somewhere else? I don't know. But from a purely journalistic point of view, would be amazing. Though it raises the question about, is everybody else has got the same thing as well? You haven't got anything exclusive. The Times have the same as the Guardian and the Telegraph. But it does sound really interesting, because otherwise the biggest thing we've had, of course, search engines were transformed our lives, and now moving on. There's been a bit of a lull, I suppose, in terms of sourcing. And something like this could go really well, I think.
Now, Robbie, from the Guardian's development team point of view, it was really interesting to see how many of the apps were using not just Guardian Open API resources, but also other things from around the web. What did the Guardian bring to the table?
Well, I mean, we had the content API, but Matt Andrews, one of the other developers in the team, managed to kind of scrape the South by Southwest website to kind of get gigs and bands and venues and information like that, which I think quite a few of the other teams used. So although that wasn't really kind of a Guardian API, it was something which, you know, one of the guys had done and brought to the table to use on the day, which was very successful. Mm.
Well, speaking of events, next weekend, The Guardian's Games Blog is hosting Games Blog Live here at King's Place, where the esteemed Keith Stewart, also a friend of the podcast, will be speaking with the mega publishers Electronic Arts about some of their forthcoming titles. You can find out more about that event at guardian.co.uk/gamesblog and read up on The Guardian South by Southwest hack at guardian.co.uk. You can test the apps yourself at rewiredstate.org/projects. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, Charles Arthur is back, and he'll be bringing us a special report from Mobile World Congress. Many thanks to our guests this week, Vic Keegan, Adam McGregor, and Robbie Clutton, and of course, everybody who came along to the South by Southwest Guardian Hack. The producer this week was Scott Cawley. I'm Alex Krotowski. See you next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.